Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another beautiful Saturday afternoon of Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. Unfortunately, I'll be running the show today by myself as Tweety had a football game. I don't know if you know, paid attention every week. He shouts out to Peter. He gives a shout out to the Little League football team that he coaches for, volunteers with, and they had a game this afternoon. So he's out there coaching the guys or getting ready for that game to start. So shout out to his team, and hopefully they'll get a victory this weekend. Interesting stuff in sports happened over the weekend. NBA started on Tuesday. Probably the most interesting thing that happened this weekend, it was in college football. Miami versus Duke Blue Devils. Of course, Miami coming off of getting just absolutely annihilated by Clemson last week, and their coach getting fired afterwards, following the game, currently after the game. Duke's having a pretty good season so far. They're ranked 22. You know, could be a little bit high, a little bit low, depending on which poll you look at. But if you did not see, you have not heard, you've been living under some sort of rock. Last play of the game, kickoff return, Miami laterals the ball 8 times. I forget the kid's number, 23. It doesn't matter who did it. Eventually, they score a touchdown. They win the game, last play of the game. And that's where the controversy starts. On the play, officials threw a flag. Said there was a block in the back. Block in the back, it was kind of close. They picked up the flag, said there was no block in the back. Of course, the play went to review, went to the replay official. There was another point in the play towards the beginning where one player who lateraled the ball off Miami looked like he may have been down. Replay official or whomever had the authority to make the call said that the guy was not down. That being said, the ACC actually came out with a determination today that the officials for the game were wrong on a couple of the calls they made. They missed a few calls in that play. So as a result, the entire officiating crew, line judge, head official, all those guys were suspended 2 games. A couple of points of contention were the guy that I just previously said who possibly was down, they actually said he was down. Miami should have been flagged for a player on the field. There was a couple of things. You can look it up yourself. But the thing that I find most interesting about this is the idea amongst people in general that officiating is a perfect form. I mean, it's perfect. You know, officials, people think officials are going to miss, going to make every call, going to make the right call every time. But it's just not true. If you think about it, officials are human. They're subjective like everybody else. They try to be objective as best as possible. But in my opinion, as a guy who's coached at the high school level for about 7 years or so now, for my time as a paid coach and last couple years volunteering, I think most calls are subjective. Not every call, most calls are subjective. And you probably think, that's crazy. It don't make no sense. But think about a call. I'm going to give you a run-of-the-mill call, like a sideline warning. If you've never played football before, there's right as you come off the field, there's a, I'm going to say it's probably about a three-yard strip from the sideline where you step out of bounds back towards the team's bench to where there's not supposed to be any players. Officials will normally allow the coaches to be in that area, but they don't want players in that area. Now, most teams probably break that on a regular basis, especially in high school because kids are hard-headed and don't listen. But most officials don't call it. They'll just keep telling you to back up or, you know, they'll give you a couple of warnings, but they generally don't call it, right? Is it a penalty if kids step into that area and are in that area? Yes. Do most officials call it? No. If you talk to a lot of officials, they'll tell you that they can call holding every play, but most officials don't call it every play. Slow the game down, et cetera, et cetera. I guess my point is that you can get upset about officiating if there's calls that are blown that are just egregious. Some of these calls, I'm not sure, are that egregious. The one block in the back corner that they overturned, neither here nor there. I think it was kind of right on that borderline. Again, subjective, not objective. To me, it was not a clear-cut blocking in the back corner. And if I remember correctly, the ACC said that they actually got that call right by picking up the flag on that. Oh, man, looking at my hotline right now, we actually got one caller. Let me pull this up. Hello, you're on Talk to Talk with Tweety and LJ.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, what's going on with Dez?
Going through it, trying to explain to the people about why they should get out their high horses about being upset with this officiating crew at the Miami Duke outcome.
Here's the thing about officiating. You know, you have to look at it from both sides. You know, yes, they're going to miss calls. They're human. Are they going to make some stupid calls? Yes, they are, because we as humans, we make stupid decisions too. But at the end of the day, you know, whether you win or lose, you have to learn from it. And if the coaches are not teaching their kids to learn from the outcome of the game, then you're not benefiting the kids that's coaching them. One thing I did like about at the end of the game, what Miami's coach has said, he's teaching his kids to play till the clock says 4-0s. And that's good. I mean, they didn't give up. They had some penalties, you know. They shouldn't have never let Duke score. Then they would have never been in a position to make 8 laterals in 45 seconds.
I always find it interesting when coaches, that to me that's coach speak, I find it interesting when coaches say cliche stuff like that when something like that goes in a favor. Well, I teach my kids to play until the last minute. In my opinion, I'm being a little bit facetious and I'm exaggerating. He's inferring as though if they were down by more than enough points for them to come back with that touchdown, that Duke would have kicked the ball off and all the players would have walked off the field, nothing would have happened. I think that's the most one. That's one of the most overrated sayings in football. I'm teaching my kids to play to the last second. Well, most kids are going to keep playing to the last second. I mean, you don't really have to, but that's neither here nor there. I love coach speak. I always think it's funny when guys say stuff like that. Because to me, by you saying I'm teaching my kids to play to the last second, you're implying that they don't know that and they don't play all the way to the end of the game. Most of them, I mean, some kids will give up on you. But for the most part, if you're making it to the Division I level as an athlete, you probably play to the last play. Most, I mean, you may not play hard to the last play, but, you know.
Yeah.
At least you play to the last play.
What I'm thinking about, D, is that, you know, they got the coach got fired, Saturday or Sunday or Monday? And, you know, with them going.
Sunday, but...
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
I'm just saying, but with them going through all of that, you know, some of them probably felt that the coach rightfully didn't deserve to get fired. You know, some of them probably did. I know it was boosters and former players that was calling for the coach to get fired. So
I think. Go ahead.
So I'm just assuming here that that's what made him say that. That we had all this turmoil the whole week, and we had this, that, and the other to go through. But if you keep playing, you never know what'll happen. I get all that. You teach kids that at 6 years old.
See, he's trying to keep them checks coming in. He's trying to say all the right things to these boosters out here and to these former Hurricane players that are all-time NFL greats or just all-time, you know, Miami greats in general with a big name. Now, he's trying to keep that job, even though I think it's highly, highly unlikely that he may stay on the staff, but he won't be the head coach of Miami next year. I mean, I just don't see any way that's happening. I want to get your take on one other thing. I was reading something on USA Today's website. Don't know who wrote it. Don't recall the author. But this guy or gal actually said the ACC should award, based on what the ACC officials association or whoever, the all this information they put out about the wrong call. This person said that the ACC should award the victory to Duke. Do you agree or disagree with that?
No, I mean, they played the game on the field. You had a ref miss the call, you know. Tough cookie. Next time you learn, hey, somebody need to tell the dude who got the ball. Period. You know, if you don't put yourself in them situations, you won't leave it up to the commissioner of the ACC or whomever else want to have input on the game. They play the game on the field. That's it.
I think that whoever wrote that article is losing their mind. It's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my entire life because it doesn't make sense. You cannot vacate. Now, if another team was cheating, maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah, I got
you. I'm not sure about that one. But this is not cheating. This is strictly human error. I don't think there's any way in the world the ACC should give that victory to Duke. I think that sets a horrible precedent. And really, it's just downright stupid because at the end of the day, yeah, these officiating mistakes happen on the last play of the game, right? But where do you draw the line at? You know, if we're going to say if an official makes a mistake just because we as in like some body of people think that the mistake is so egregious that we're going to start awarding teams victory. Where does it draw the line? I mean, where do you draw the line? What if my team loses by 3 points and I had a penalty call on me in the second quarter that nullified a touchdown that shouldn't have been a penalty? Do I get awarded the victory? You know what I mean? So I think it's just a tell if, I mean, and I don't expect the ACC to do this, but my point being would be I think it would set a horrible precedent, and I just don't think it makes sense. Because I think you're opening up a can of worms because officials are subject to make bad calls at all times because they're human. Just like everybody else, you know, they see what they see, they see what they think they see, and they see what somebody tells them they should have saw.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So I don't think the ACC should do that. I don't think they should even consider that, and I don't think they will, and I think it's insane to even consider doing something like that because, again, it's officiating is subjective. It's from somebody's viewpoint, and as many calls as officials probably miss during the game, but like I said, if you blow it early in the game, what's to stop another team from saying, hey, I lost by 3 points. I scored a touchdown early on a holding call. It wasn't a holding call. If you give me that touchdown, I win. I want that overturn. I want you to give me my victory back. So I don't think the ACC will do it. And I think the person who wrote that should probably start writing travel features or something like that. And probably shouldn't be writing about sports because that's stupid. Either that or they graduate from Miami and they're very emotional. Excuse me, not Miami, but
from Duke,
and they're very emotional. By the way, a very important game because now Duke is 3-1 in the Coastal Conference of the ACC. And they're now one game behind North Carolina, who they actually play this Saturday. Should be an interesting game. You know, that could decide one side of whether Duke has opportunity at a conference championship or not. Very, you know, it's very interesting. Another big thing that happened in college football, I want to get the take on. fuck is his name? J.T. The quarterback for Ohio State, J.T. Barrett, arrested on, I don't know how, I forget, not DUI, driving while intoxicated, driving under the influence, one of them damn things where you're drinking and you're not supposed to be behind the wheel. Arrested.
Yeah.
Luckily, Ohio State didn't, you know, they don't have a game this week, so he's suspended for their game next week. The AD came out and said that he's not subject to, I think it's the school's mandatory 2-week suspension because he was arrested. However, he was only charged with a misdemeanor, and not a felony. What do you think that Urban Meyer, outside of the quarterback, what do you think that Urban Meyer should do after, you know, after this kid? What do you think he should do with Barrett?
Well, first of all, my thought process on it is, you know, these teenagers or young men, you know, they still growing. You know, you have to preach the, not so much preach, or talk to them about how to conduct themselves outside of, you know, school functions. Whether you just be going to the store or getting something to eat, you know, it's always something that's going to be calling your name because you're a star athlete. You have to handle yourself accordingly. Now, what he's probably doing some extra, you know, gashes at you know, at practice or after practice, or you know, I'm pretty sure he's being punished, but he's not being punished severely by Urban Meyer because he's going to sit out next week. And then turn around, whoever they play 2 weeks after that, he's probably going to be playing again. So really,
the interesting thing to me about alcohol, and I think it's different with alcohol in college and when you're out of college, as far as like you graduated and moved on. Now, when I was in college, I don't say everybody drink, but I know there's quite a few people in college. I mean, college, there's not a whole lot to do. You tend to be in small towns, small cities, smaller cities where the city revolves around the university because the city's just not big, especially when you're at a large university. So a lot of people drink. A lot of kids drink. If you go back through a lot of people's records, you see that a lot of these kids, a lot of adults now, had alcohol-related incidents when they were in college. And I'm not excusing him. I'm talking about stuff like whatever your city or locality, a municipality calls it, in Lubbock, where I went to college at, it was called minor in possession. If you're underage, you're at a party where there's drinking involved. Sometimes they would just give you a ticket for being there. Other times, you know, if you were actually drinking, you had to be actually drinking or caught with alcohol to actually get a ticket. Now, not knowing all the full details, I wouldn't be surprised if he got off rather light. I think the thing that's going to get him I think the thing that most people will get caught up on is the fact that he was in a vehicle. And so, you know, when most people think about alcohol and vehicle, they automatically draw the line to you drinking, driving, and you killing somebody. And again, I'm not justifying what he did or anything like that. I'm just saying that's the line that most people would draw. So I think that most people would see it differently if he were just however old he is. He got caught at a party at a keg party with a cup of alcohol, you know, and got arrested. But because he was behind the wheel, I think that's going to make his punishment a little bit more severe, and I would not be surprised if he does not play at Ohio State anymore this season.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think will happen. You know, if he does, it'll be towards like the latter part of the season, but I don't think you're going to see him. Excuse me, over the next few weeks. And like I said, I don't know if he'll get suspended for the rest of the season. I think he'll be suspended for at least a few games beyond next week. But I expect him probably not to play anymore for Ohio State this season. For the simple fact, like I said, that he was behind the vehicle. And if you look over the past 5 to 10 years with Ohio State, in particular the football program now, they haven't really had as many issues with Urban Meyer, the head coach. But when Jim Tressel was there, you know, the tattoo stuff, of course, everybody knows, or most people who follow sports know about Maurice Claret, the jersey, you know, all that stuff that's happened in the past 10 years with Ohio State. So I think this will all add up, and, you know, they'll want to be, they being the athletic department, will not want this to compound. So, and I would say their public affair, the public, whatever you call it, folks. Yeah, public relations public people have done a great job because, you know, this guy, you know, there's been quarterback controversy all year long at Ohio State. There, the guy who just took over again as a starting quarterback gets a DUI or DWI, I think it's DUI. And there's not, I mean, from what I've seen the last couple of days, this hadn't made, I mean, it's been news, but it hasn't been talked about as much as I would have thought. I mean, the whether or not they should, Cardale Jones should start or JT Barrett should start, that, they talked about that in the media more than they have talked about this kid getting a DUI. Oh, my gosh, 8 minutes left. Time has flown by. I want to move on real quick to something else. NBA season started Tuesday. Have you caught any of the games?
Not really. I caught a little bit of the San Antonio game. Who they played?
San Antonio played the Thunder on Wednesday. So I've seen a few games this year, so far this season. I think Golden State played twice. And I must say that I'm not sure what the NBA, what anybody in the NBA is going to be able to do with Steph Curry this year. I would not be surprised. I don't know if he'll average 30 a night because if they played like they did last year where he didn't end up playing a lot of fourth quarter because they had large leads. I think he's going to up his – I mean, he looked – He put, of course, game one, I think he scored 40, but he scored 24 in the first quarter. I watched the game last night. They played the Pelicans. He scored 28 in the third quarter, and scored 53 points. The biggest difference between, from what I saw, these first couple games, or the first two games that I've seen him play this year and last year, was he just looks more aggressive and less passive. You know, there's some opportunities where, I mean, you know, I would say he forced the shot. The issue a little bit, maybe there's a guy wide open, but I mean he's such an incredible shooter. I think he's going to be better this year than he was last year. The other thing I noticed is I've seen the Thunder play twice. You can already see the impact that Billy Donovan is having on their team, and it's not to knock Scott Brooks, but a lot of times you know it'd be. That they'd come, Westbrook or Durant come down. They'd either go 1-4 low set, you know, with Durant or Westbrook at the top and the four guys across the baseline or some form of that. Or they run pick and roll, but it was just a lot of dribble from one end of the court into the other into a one on one situation or a pick and roll or one pass into a pick and roll or a one on one. The difference is now is there's a lot more movement, there's a lot more of the ball going from one side of the floor to the other. Now, Durant and Westbrook are still getting their isolations, still getting pick and roll action, but the way they're getting into the action is different. Like I said, as opposed to just dribbling into it, a lot of times they're coming off of screens and stuff like that, catching the ball in their sweet spots, or, you know, giving them a little bit more of an advantage. Then I think they'll have to work. It'll be a little bit easier for them to score, but they have to expend a little bit less energy, in my opinion, scoring on the Billy Donovan right now.
So it's not one on one with 20 seconds left on the shot clock.
No, they're doing a. I mean, of course, you know they're going to do what they do, but it's just more. It's more of a motion offense, kind of, more of a motion offense, and you know. Guys getting into the position that they like to get into, and then getting the ball. There was not a, there's a great, they played a great game against Orlando Saturday night. Victor Oladipo hit a three. Oh, actually, Durant hit a three to tie the game. Victor Oladipo hit a three, and I think it was like a minute, I mean 1.7 seconds left in the game. Russell Westbrook hit a 40-footer, tied the game up. Winning a double OT. I think Westbrook ended up with 48, Durant had 43. But a great game, nonetheless. But I think it's going to be an exciting NBA season. I think it's going to be the one of the best NBA seasons in a while. Last year, a lot of injuries to star players.
Yeah, I think the West is going to be strong again. Especially when Aldridge finds his way with San Antonio, they're going to be as usual. San Antonio's going to be somewhere in the top four.
Yeah, I expect San Antonio, like I said, to get it together. Oh my God, man! Once Aldridge starts rolling, you can tell he was trying to fit in a little bit when they played the Thunder. I didn't watch the entire game, but I saw enough of it to know, it's kind of difficult, or I would say difficult. It is difficult, and it's also an adjustment when you go from being the number one guy on a team for year after year after year, perennial all-star, to going from that team to being, I would say, I don't know if you would classify him as San Antonio's best player right now, or you say it's Kawhi Leonard, but either 1A or 1B, one or two. But, just playing the way San Antonio plays, it's going to take some adjustment, some time to adjust. And I think once he adjusts, like you said, San Antonio will be fine. I think the most interesting team right now this year in the NBA is going to be the Clippers. They got a pretty good bench. They got the Lance Stevenson inserted into the starting lineup. He basically plays Matt Barnes. I'm not a Clippers guy. I don't like Chris Paul. I'm not a fan of Chris Paul, even though he's a great point guard. I don't expect the Clippers to make much noise. I mean, I'm sure they'll make it to the I don't think they can beat the Thunder or Golden State. So I think it's another maybe second round exit for them, as always. We got about 2 minutes left. I want to get your take on the Cowboys game. Do you think the Cowboys are going to win? Probably less than an hour.
Well,
I guess the Seahawks, or you think they're going to take another L?
The Cowboys will win if what's the running back name?
Dan McFadden. Or Marshawn Lynch.
If McFadden runs for 150 yards, the Cowboys will win. Because they have to find some kind of way to take all that pressure out for Matt Castle. Because the Seahawks, their linebacker is pretty good. Bobby Wagner is pretty good to me. I think he's one of the best in the NFL. They're going to have to find some way to neutralize him. And if McFadden starts off good, I think that'll help Castle. That'll take some pressure off of them where they can throw the little out routes or the little crossing routes because, they're just going to be locked up with Richard Sherman. So whoever, whether it be Terrence Williams or Cole Beasley or somebody's going to have to make plays in that second and third day receiver position.
I think Terrence Williams is going to have a big game. I got about 45 seconds left. Like I said, I expect Terrence Williams to have a big game. But Dez Bryant expected to play tonight. That's going to take a lot of pressure off of him. The other thing I think is going to be interesting today, by the way, Jameis Winston is playing great since the bye week in the NFL. Be very interesting. Matt Castle won't get three interceptions this week before it. If he throw that many interceptions, Dez Bryant is going to be under that like a bad rash. But thank y'all for tuning in this week. Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. Full disclosure, the caller, that's my older brother, Anthony. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it, Miss Tweety. Couldn't be here. I appreciate you calling in and helping me out this week. Thank everybody else. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. See y'all same time, same channel next week. Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. Peace.
Peace.
Hey, can I have you a 10? Hey, a 10.